Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Well, as the holidays approach, today we're talking good food prepared at home. While cooking at home is still very much a holiday tradition, everyday family meals, perhaps less so. Given our busy schedules and the wide proliferation of food from fast food to fine dining, the sit-down family meal is sometimes an endangered species. My guest today states that although his fame comes from the recent celebrity chef phenomenon, which has fueled this explosion of restaurants, he believes ardently that this cultural trend has made cooking more of a spectator sport than participatory, to the detriment of our health as well as our family health. John Besh is an acclaimed chef and restaurateur in South Louisiana. His eight restaurants there include August, Luc La Provence, and Dominica in New Orleans, and is a frequent guest on the Today Show, on Food Network, and of course he has his own public television show, Chef John Besh's New Orleans. His first book, My New Orleans, explored the great foods and techniques of that culinary capital. His latest, though, My Family Table, A Passionate Plea for Home Cooking, is, as the title suggests, a basic to advanced primer on how to make healthy family meals at home and to return the dinner table to its prominence as the focal point for family interaction and communication. Chef John Besh joins me today on Studio Tulsa. John Besh, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, well, thank you for having me, Rick. I appreciate it.
Yeah, My Family Table seems to be written for the increasing number of people and families where eating at home is more the exception than the rule. I'm interested, what do you say to people that say, you know, I don't have the time, I don't have the energy to schedule and make good home-cooked food?
No, isn't it interesting that how many changes that we've seen over the years with the advent of so much technology that seemingly would have an impact of giving us a little more time to spend with our families, but it's had quite the opposite effect. And we find that even now with becoming so much more efficient in the rest of our lives, we still have this void of time, time for the priorities. And I think when it comes down to it, food with family and friends at the supper table, breaking bread, you know, there's very few things that are as important as that. And if we could only find the time to sit down, slow down, communicate with each other, and actually have a proper meal, we could change a lot of the wrongs in our society. And I think it's really interesting. I've dealt with this problem for years. This is something that I saw creep into our own lives. The genesis of the book was that I have a wife, four boys, and then we found ourselves in a similar situation. I questioned one day what Jennifer was feeding the lads, and she turns back and says, well, if you paid half as much attention to what the boys and I were eating at home as you do all the highfalutin customers in your restaurants, then we would all be much better off. And it really gave me pause and made me think about this. Well, you know, if this can happen to me, it can happen to anybody, because I'm supposed to be food savvy with all these awards and restaurants, and one would think that I would have the food thing all wrapped up at home. And I found out that I was, you know, this was happening to me. It's just that simple that we become so caught up in our lives that we often take for granted the importance of food. And family.
You know, we have an organization here locally. It's called Global Gardens. They're really pushing the idea of family meals, like at least four times a week, having a family dinner or maybe a family breakfast. I know in your family, breakfast is perhaps the big meal where everybody gets together.
Right. And my message is that, you know, do whatever it takes to find the time. If it's a meal a week, if that's what you're aiming for, then you can certainly carve out one meal with family and friends and or friends. I realize a lot of people don't live close to family, and if you don't have children, then you're probably not getting what I'm talking about. But, you know, just a generation ago, you didn't have the disposable income that people have now. And so dining out was much more of a special occasion than what it is today. And so
that's really changed.
We would go into a chain and get a hamburger and some French fries. That was like a real treat. We didn't live on that. We lived on those home-cooked meals around the table. And oftentimes, two parents and all my siblings and real conversation took place. You know, our faith was passed down. Etiquette was passed down. manners were taught, passed down. All these different things that it takes, I think, to form the real human are transmitted at the family table. And so without that family table, then we're not passing along this really pertinent information, plus health and nutrition. And so it's interesting how much things have changed. And so that's why I ask people, just make a goal of sitting down one day a week. And if you can do it one day, then chances are you can do it 2 days. And if you can do it 2 days, then maybe you can throw in another meal period, like a breakfast. And that, I work at night predominantly. People want to dine out at night. And so I have to find that time when it works for me. And so for me, I'm an early morning person. I wake up, I get those stone ground grits on, I'm cooking for the boys, biscuits in the oven, and I want to make them a proper breakfast. And I want to have them, their undivided attention. I don't think they've really appreciated it as much as I do, but we have our moment in the morning. And we've always been a family meal type of family on Sunday, after going to Mass, and we come home, and then I cook. And so now I find when I'm cooking at home on Sunday, I'll throw a couple of extra things in the oven. I've already made a mess of the kitchen. As my wife says, I have an Iron Chef with myself on Sundays. And that I destroy the kitchen, but I'll just throw in an extra chicken. If I'm cooking one, I'll cook two. If I'm already heating up the oven for something, then I'll just pop a pork roast in. And the point of this is that on those busy school nights, then all Jennifer has to do is reheat the chicken or the pork roast and a couple of things. And I have a whole list of things in my book about simple meals that you can cook in a hurry if you take the time to really plan your meals out. And so now we're on a 7 days a week. We're eating, the boys are eating at home at the family table. I make it in for most of those meals. And then, there are times, obviously, when I'm working that I can't get in, eat a meal, and then get back to the restaurant. But then Jennifer at least has it set, with today with all the travel, sports, and this and that, and folks are just running around way more than ever before. This book, My Family Table, gives people a recipe how to make the time and how to find the time in their own lives.
And really, it involves just a bit of preparation, as you mentioned, a Sunday dinner, making extra dinner. That extra chicken doesn't necessarily have to be warmed up roast chicken. It could be chicken salad. It could be...
Right. And that's the point, yeah. Is that none of us, those of us who did grow up at the family table know all too well what leftovers are. We didn't like leftovers.
Right.
And so instead of having leftovers, we're just going to repurpose.
For lack not leftovers, the repurposed
we'll take
food.
That chicken, we'll turn the chicken into a salad. We'll turn the chicken into a soup. We can take the pork roast and turn it into a Cuban sandwich or a meaty pork ragu tossed with pasta. And so the combinations are limitless. But the idea is, if I'm already finding the time to cook one meal, then I can probably squeeze out two or three without even realizing it. And a lot of people don't realize how inexpensive it is to actually cook at home, where I think we see these advertisements, you can get a family meal this or a family meal that at a fast food chain, and I'm not knocking them, but too often we're sustaining ourselves on just that, which I think is very bad. You see the price point, and you think, well, how in the heck can I ever cook a meal for that price at home? I mean, the chicken itself is going to cost this or that. And I have a lot of recipes in there with four big boys, and my wife and I, a chicken will feed all six of us. Mm-hmm. And then not only that, I'll save that chicken carcass and I'll make a stock, and that stock is going to be a soup for us later in the week. And so we need to get back to some of the basics that our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents knew all too well.
And with that preparation, it really doesn't take any more time than you would to drive to a restaurant or go to a restaurant, sit down, wait for a table, wait for the service, wait for the food, and have the food, and then come home or to the
absolutely.
Next activities.
Absolutely, and I think it really comes down to just thinking things through. And a lot of people, I think, are overwhelmed today. We're overwhelmed with, trying to keep up with the Joneses. We're running, and we almost feel powerless. And a lot of us weren't raised as a chef, and I certainly understand that. And that's why the book is really sculpted towards families. Like, look, these are tips that I use in my restaurants every day that make cooking so easy. and that if we adopt some of these for purposes of eating and cooking as a family, then it makes life a lot easier. And so it's kind of passing on information that a chef would know that a home cook might not. And that a few of these tips, I think, go a long way.
Well, I found it interesting because it really doesn't presuppose a lot of knowledge. If you're a novice in the kitchen, you're telling folks how to make eggs.
Right.
But if you are an experienced chef, you're giving them a lot of hints as well.
And a lot of us might take that for granted. But, you know, well, how do you cook an egg? How do you boil an egg? And I wanted to create a book, not for the chef. I wanted to create a book for the person that is craving time with the family but doesn't know how to get there.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to build an argument for if we could fix some of these things, if we could implement just some of these lessons in our own lives, then, I mean, that really could change the course of things. You look at what we're dealing with as far as childhood obesity, early onset adult diabetes. You're looking at the things that we're struggling with today, and they could easily be fixed. Not all of them, but most of them could be fixed by families putting away everything that's just, you know, overly processed, sitting down as a family and having sensible meals together. Well, but the more that we eat on the run, the more that we try to order it from a drive-through window, just further pushes us away from where we really need to be, I think, in many ways, whether it's health, whether it's just, I think, mentally, the human, or emotionally, the human spirit wants to commune at a table. We've evolved to this point where we need to spend some time in community, in communion with one another at the table. All sorts of great things happen outside of just the food aspect as well.
My guest today is a New Orleans chef and restaurateur, John Besh. His new book is titled My Family Table, A Passionate Plea for Home Cooking. It follows up on his previous books, My New Orleans, which is all about slow, all-day cooking. This new book, My Family Table, is about whether it's getting a meal together quickly on a school night or Sunday dinner or these incredible little master recipes that you have, which could be on a school night, but it's I just want to start with those. It's the very first section of the book. You have a risotto, a vegetable soup, a ragu, a frittata, a curry, and a fruit crumble, which would be, I guess, a dessert, that you can use virtually any ingredients with. It's basically the base recipes in which you add whatever you have in the house.
Sure. So, Rich, what I'm trying to get people to do is understand that if you're going to shop, then buy a few things. Like, you can buy some risotto. You can buy some pasta. You can buy some of these things to just have on hand. And no matter what you have in season, no matter what you have in the fridge, we can put together a meal just with those. If you have nothing more than eggs and a few vegetables, then I'll show you how to make a frittata that works for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. And simple go-to recipes like that, I think, go a long way in helping people kind of understand, you know what, I can do this, and I am empowered to do so because it's laying the argument out for me right here. And so no matter what meat I have left over, whether it's a little roast chicken or it's some turkey that's left over, I can chop that up, toss it with some onions, some little bit of garlic, and some canned tomatoes that I have in there, and I can create this incredible ragu, the same that you would find on the Tuscan countryside, for that matter, toss it with pasta, and I have something delicious and soul-warming for my family at the family table.
Yeah, that's a great start to the book. The other thing that happens early on is what you call the essential pantry. It's basically the ingredients that you can have on hand so that you can take nearly anything you might have in the house and make a meal out of it.
Right.
What sort of ingredients are you talking about? I know there's like pasta. There's a particular paprika.
I believe in spending a little extra on like really good pasta, because if you have a good artisan made pasta and you have some good olive oil, then that goes a long way. I believe in keeping some grains, and I love these. We have a lot of brown rices out there right now, and whether it's you know, grains like this that you always, you have a staple. You know, I'm wanting people to have the basics of like good peasant food cookery for their, you know, so that anything goes after that, if you, as long as you have a certain. And then I have other things that I just always keep on hand that I thought people might want to know about, things like Thai chili paste. Not an ordinary thing, but yet it's in most grocery stores these days. And so I use it in a few recipes that really kind of like spice up and make the food come alive without it being overly hot and spicy. And so I love to pull and use various items from various cultures found around the world that I think makes food interesting. And that's another thing, because growing up, I noticed we traveled a lot through the world to the foods that we ate. And so as we would eat something, my dad or my mother would have an interesting little tidbit about where they first had this dish, or this dish comes from this part of Italy, or this dish comes from France, or this dish is, you know, only native to Louisiana. Whatever it happened to be, I just love the fact that we could travel through food. And remember at the age of 9 conquering the chopstick, and I thought that was the greatest thing on earth. And for a good couple of years, I wanted to eat everything I ate with chopsticks. Probably the only kid in the neighborhood that did that, but hey, I was destined to be a chef. And so I love the fact of introducing great cultures to our family table, and it's a chance for my sons to learn about this world that they live in.
Now, speaking of cooking with your sons, the next section is on Sunday dinners. And, you know, Sunday dinners in the Midwest for, gosh, most of the last century was always meant a roast. And
right.
And how quickly has that tradition fallen away? And I think from that section, you would like to reinstitute that tradition in those households that have abandoned the practice.
Because
there's a roast pork shoulder. There's beef roast. I think there's some venison. There's a roast chicken.
Sure.
And that becomes sort of like a scary thing because we're worried about overcooking meat, and the tendency is to overcook the meat.
Right. And another point of this book is to really make the argument that, you know what, don't take it so serious. Okay, like you have a roast, and this is how you cook a roast, and it's just as simple as following this recipe. But then something else. If you overcook it, that's all right. I'll show you what to do with it when you overcook it, because we will all overcook something from time to time. And so that's why the leftovers, we're going to cook those down into a gravy and toss with pasta. Or I'm going to cook it down and make a stew or a soup out of it. And so it's okay. And that not to get so fixated on everything having to be perfect, because it'll never be. You know, but perfection comes at families and people spending time at their family table eating good food. And certainly not just the food from my book, but just eating food with one another, with the utensils. You know, I travel through schools all across the country. I notice from inner city school to the rich, predominantly white schools in the suburbs, that children have lost, they have no idea how to use silverware anymore.
Mm.
Because everything is generally packaged so that it's eaten by hand. And that's a really scary thing, because what is it that we're consuming like that? Most of it's fried, which is, I have a whole chapter in there on fried chicken. I'm not against any type of food, but I'm all for doing it yourself as often as you can, which makes me a huge hypocrite, because I'm also asking people to support their local chefs.
Restaurateurs have made it a lot easier. I want to get back to the idea of that Sunday dinner. This is, from what I can see, your kids cook with you on Sunday.
Yeah, the boys cook with me.
And that's a Louisiana tradition of the men cooking on Sunday, too,
isn't
it?
Yeah, men cook. And Sunday, you know, that's the day that men cook. And hunting camps and fishing camps and that culture of the outdoors, I think, spawns that sort of thing. Where even in my house growing up, I would catch a fish, Mom would cook the fish. I would shoot a deer, Dad and I would cook that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of how it was always, you know, game was the men's thing. And so there's a great culture of that down here. And I like the fact of having a chance to have the boys interact with me. And what I don't want to do is force them, say, you must cook with me in the kitchen starting at 11 o'clock and blah, blah, blah. And instead, as they pass through, hey, Jack, why don't you peel some garlic for me? He loves peeling garlic. Don't ask me why. And Luke, why don't you measure this out? He loves to measure everything. Andrew loves to make a mess, and so I'll have him beat the eggs. And before you know it, I have a whole brigade of sous chefs, and my work is almost done. If only it were that easy. But I love bringing them in from time to time, keeping it fun, and I want them to grow up enjoying the family table, enjoying cooking as a family, because then they're going to pass it on to their children.
My guest today is John Besh, the New Orleans chef and restaurateur. His latest book is titled My Family Table, A Passionate Plea for Home Cooking, and it goes through a whole lot of sections, and I want to talk about this next section. It's what used to be a staple in nearly every kitchen, and that was the big cast iron pot.
And, that's right. I have a whole chapter delivered.
And I tell you what, you can find them in flea markets sometimes, but, you know, who has a cast iron skillet or pot today? And we're talking great, great recipes like chicken fricassee, coq au vin, you know, these staples. And it's all made in one pot.
Right. Well, these are, coming from South Louisiana, most of our good foods come from the cast iron pot. And so, we're talking about the stews and the gumbos and the etouffees and the jambalayas and all those wonderful things that really define our culture are found in that cast iron pot. And if you look throughout history, most of the foods that sustained our grandparents came from cast iron pots. The meats had to be, was it once in a blue moon you would have the tenderloin, the good cut of meat. Most of the time we survived on the cheaper cuts, the lesser cuts that need slow cooking. And so there's something soul warming about cooking in the cast iron pot, letting the flavors meld together in such a way that the meats have tenderized over time and the flavors have kind of mingled with the other flavors of onions and garlic and potatoes and carrots, whatever you happen to be cooking in that cast iron pot. And it's a way that we've almost lost touch with that because people deem it as arduous. And so what I'm saying is Jack probably requires a little more work with me in the evenings. If I'm home, I'll work with him on his vocabulary and whatnot. And so as I'm doing that, we might have his index cards. We might be playing games as far as spelling or vocab goes. But I can also throw a pot roast into the cast iron pot and get that going on in the, have it cooking for a couple of hours while we're putting the boys to bed or whatnot. And then my wife has it to reheat the next day. And so we're not cooking just when we're hungry. We're thinking ahead. We're using that cast iron pot almost like the crock pot. It's just better.
Now, how is the cast iron skillet or pot better than a crock pot?
Well, it just requires a little more effort. And by requiring a little more effort, then you're very careful about what you put in instead of just dumping, stirring, turning it on, and letting it go. There's something more soulful about it because you're invested. It's not easy cooking. Even though I think it's rather simplistic, it can be complex. You add certain things at certain times, and you're bringing out deeper and richer flavors. So your food's going to taste better. And it's also going to be, I think, more enjoyable because you'll have this pride factor of, yes, I did this. Look at how wonderful I am. And it's really about bringing that style back, because if we don't, we will lose it forever. If we lose it forever, then we're losing something really important about our culture.
And I think this is one of the points you make. It says, watching food shows is now, it's a spectator sport here in America, and yet more and more of us are not going to the kitchen to do it ourselves. We'd rather watch football than go out in the backyard and play football, and the same with cooking.
Right, and I think that, I don't know if we've ever been more food-oriented than what we are now, mm-hmm. but yet I think that we're probably more unhealthy now than we ever have been. And so these are real issues for us where we've got to make decisions as a society of what we're going to do. And basically, that's what forced me to make up my mind that I'm not going to continue to do a lot of these cooking shows that I used to do. And I'm not bad-mouthing them. They're quite fun to watch. because I feel like I'm adding to the problem where children who are eating fried food after fried food are aware of what chefs are doing what on what TV show, but yet they're not eating properly themselves.
Yeah.
And that is what I have a problem with. And so that's why I want to be careful about how we portray food. And that's why I want food to be that centerpiece of the table, that common thread, if you will, that brings us all, like all of humanity together at the table.
Yeah. I want to ask one last question. The holidays are coming around the corner, and I know in your book you actually have a wonderful roast goose recipe. Is goose coming up on the menus here shortly? give us a sense of what the best table looks like around the holidays.
Well, you know, you have your Thanksgiving holidays, which everybody has the obligatory turkey, and then we have our country ham. But then what really sets like ours apart from other parts of the country, that we have all these what we call dressings. Essentially stuffings. We for some reason in the South we call them dressings, and so we'll have oyster dressing, and then we'll have crawfish and andouille cornbread dressing, then we'll have crab meat and shrimp merloton dressing, and you know, just all these great rich dressings and kind of like all those side dishes. That's predominantly what I that's when I think of Thanksgiving. I think of that. I'm also a hunter, along with introducing my children into hunting. And so down here we'll always have some venison or some wild boar, but lots of ducks, lots of geese. And so there will always be, whether it's a roast goose for Christmas or it's generally roasted geese. I mean, we're shooting multiples. And when we cook, we're cooking for, Christmas supper might be 30, 40 people over at the house.
Wow.
And so we're doing a bunch of geese, or I'll cook some ducks and make a nice duck gumbo. And it's generally food of the, it's always of the season, and it's food that really represents who we are. So on the holidays, it's about coming back home, cooking the foods that define who we are as a culture. And that, there's a lot of seafood and there's a lot of wild game.
Well, we wish you a great holiday season, a little early, but it does sound like a good place to be for the holidays. The name of the new book?
Rich, if you're in my neck of the woods, you may want to come on down. I'll cook for you. You can have supper with us.
You might see me on your doorstep. You better be careful about that. The name of the book is My Family Table. John Besh, how many restaurants do you have now? You have 7 or 8 in New Orleans?
We have 8. You could say 9. We have a... within the National World War II Museum complex, we have a couple of little concepts. One of them is a diner, and another one's a artisan soda shop. And so it depends on how you count those. But we've been very, very blessed and have a number of restaurants down here in New Orleans. And if you ever find the time, come down and let us entertain you.
All right. John Besh, thanks so much for your time.
Take good care. Thank you. And have a happy holiday season.
New Orleans chef and restaurateur John Besh speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His new book is titled My Family Table, A Passionate Plea for Home Cooking. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Go to the website and search for Studio Tulsa, and all the programs are there. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.